chatting.
Yeah. Yeah. I was deathly ill.
Yeah, what'd you get? What'd you have?
You know, I think it's just flu. My wife had it, and then my middle daughter got it, and like on Friday after school, like they called me, like school gets out at like 2:30. They called me at 2 o'clock and they're like, she's here in the nurse's office and she doesn't look good. And I was like, oh, should I come get her? Like, no, we'll bring her on the bus. So she was sick like all day Saturday. I felt great Sunday. Then my son got sick on Sunday and into Monday. And then I was kind of okay. Tuesday evening, I felt a little tired, went to bed early. Wednesday, I was destroyed. Thursday, I was destroyed. Friday, I felt pretty good. And so
flu is one of the worst on like the ranking of sicknesses. Flu, I think, is worse than cold.
Flu is kind of dramatic, right? It's just like it kind of hits you and it's like it's just really destabilizing. You're like, oh, my God. You know, when you get that and I'm sure this is so boring, but like you get that achy, chill, hot thing going, you know, when you really like fevered up and you're just like, I am just a tiny little speck of dust in this world that is completely to the whims of fate and time, you know, like you just, you never quite feel as weak as you do as when you're like lying in bed, like both chilled and achy. You're just like, oh, please.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. The good news was it also made me really tired. So I slept, like I didn't feel good, but I like on Wednesday, my wife went and like got me like a Gatorade. I went to bed at 10 o'clock in the morning. I was like, okay, I'm just going to go to sleep or something. And I woke up like at 2 in the afternoon. I was like, ugh. Oh my God.
Have you know that you mentioned that chilled, kind of chilled and achy and helpless feeling?
Yeah.
Have you ever been sick enough that you've had to go to the hospital and been inpatient for a while?
Like because of illness, like flu kind of illness?
Or really just about anything, nope. Like not like a surgery, but a sickness.
Nope. I've only ever had surgery.
Okay, because I have a autoimmune condition where I occasionally have to go to the hospital. Usually it's fine. It's no problem. I get a monthly infusion. It's not a big deal. But every now and then, it's been like 10 years or more since I've had to do this, but they send me to the hospital and I'm in that state that you describe where it's like achy and useless and just kind of laying there like, I'm at the mercy of whatever this thing is that's working through me. And if you're in that state and you get to go to the hospital and you get to lay there, it's really nice. You have like, you know.
I highly recommend hospitals.
Yeah. They put you on IV fluids. Pretty nurses come to like bring you stuff like Jell-O and stuff. And they every 3 or 4 hours, they hit you full of like morphine or whatever. And you're just laying there and you're like, okay, I can't do anything and I'm helpless, but these people are going to take care of me. And it's really nice. Like it's a really nice feature of our medical system, which has very few nice features to it, but it's a really nice, like hit the power button on the back, turn yourself off and just lay there and just give yourself over
to the
system.
Just do it. There's, you know, and the system is, and like, so I've never done, but my daughter has type 1 diabetes, right? So she has. I've been to the hospital with her, and she had some kind of infection, and they get dangerous, so she had to get some fluids and antibiotics. And it was like, you know, she's like little kid, so it was like 3 days. People talk about teachers and all these different things. Like, we are not doing enough for nurses in this world, no matter what you think. Like, you get a good nurse. And like with a kid, it's like even worse. Like I'm putting my child's life in your hands. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And you get good nurses. Like it is just the difference night and day.
Men, oh, it's such
women,
a difference.
The whole thing. It is just the entire experience hinges. It's like doctors are the most useless people in the hospital. I don't even care. They keep coming by and I'm like, get the fuck out, dude. Just what are you going to tell me? Nothing. You got to get on a call. Just go, jackass. You know, it's just like the nurse who is just there to take care of you as a person, as like a human being.
It's really nice.
It is. Hey, you know who you can thank for that?
Who?
The Civil War.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huge American nursing change and codification of the system and enlistment. And then it also got to be mostly women because mostly men were dying.
I also don't have any problem. I mean, in terms of if we're talking about like paying nurses more or something like that, I don't necessarily agree because I think a couple of reasons. One is because nurses, they have to endure a relatively short period of schooling and training. You can be a relatively untrained person, young woman, usually young men, sometimes it's like joining the army where you just don't have to have that much background qualification and they'll just plug you right into a pretty good job and they put you in there and you immediately can have this fairly meaningful, impactful job where you get paid a decent wage without much having to endure much training or schooling. And I think that's kind of a unique fit and a unique kind of cool thing in our economy. But the other reason is, have I talked to you before about this book, Bullshit Jobs, that I read?
No.
Okay, this is a really interesting book, Bullshit Jobs by David Graeber. And he has this whole thing about, basically the thesis statement of the book is there are something like 40%, 30 to 40% of jobs in America where people essentially think that their own job is complete bullshit and shouldn't even exist. And if the job just disappeared, the world would not change at all. And
really,
even the world.
This is like, these are not even jobs that could be replaced by machines. You're just saying this job is not even necessary.
Complete bullshit. Like, the job should not exist. And there's, he goes through this whole taxonomy of all these different kinds of bullshit jobs that exist out there. But obviously nursing is not a bullshit job.
Oh my God. I think it's probably one of the more critical jobs.
Yeah. And we won't get too deep into what bullshit jobs are. Maybe this is some fodder for another time. But he has this whole theory about how teachers, for example, are chronically underpaid. Nurses potentially are chronically underpaid. But the thing is, they get to do a job that is critical to society and that has immediate and obvious meaning, where if you're doing that job, you know exactly what you're doing, you know exactly why you're doing it, and you're having a direct impact on something in society. And so you don't have to suffer this, you don't have to pay the psychic toll of doing a job that's stupid and worthless, but you actually get to do something meaningful. And so all the people that are sitting there on their computers doing, you know, trying to affect some merger between two companies and doing a bunch of useless due diligence on that transaction, or that are like just, you know, killing themselves, watching their work get burned at the end of the day. Just stupid, idiotic tasks that like no one should have to do. They're sitting there looking over the fence, looking at the grass on the other side, and looking at the teachers and looking at the nurses and being like, you guys get to do something cool. You get to do something meaningful. And so don't complain to me about the fact that you're underpaid, because you get to wake up every day and have an impact on life and on people.
That can only be said by a wealthy person. Somebody who has all of their needs met, somebody who doesn't have to struggle for any of those things, can look over there and say, well, you should be satisfied that what you're doing at least means something. I'm over here so wealthy and my work doesn't fulfill me. Like, dude, shut the fuck up. If we're going to talk about capitalism in those terms, then let's get real stark about it. Then you're going to say, like, okay, fine. Then if that's the case, then you need to, like, not exist. And I guarantee you, like, this, I'll just take the Marxist side of it, right? And Marx is like, okay, let's evaluate how important jobs are. Don't do your job for 10 days. Everybody stop doing their job, you know, for 10 days, and we'll discover whose jobs are really important. And if you were to do that experiment, you will find the mergers and acquisitions complainers looking at mediocrity spreadsheets for $1 million a year is the most worthless job there is. Whereas the nurse, the firefighter, the garbage collector, like the doctor, these things are critical. The airline mechanic, I mean, the number of things that are so critically important, none of those things are paid all that well. It is always the sidelines, the people that make money off those people. And like, and you can say like, those people are lucky because their job matters. Like, that is such horseshit to somebody who is working hard to pay the bills. And like, it's just, it's crazy how hard it, like, just give them the money. Give them half of your money, you know, stock guy. I don't understand. Like we're so misappropriate. We've got to the point where it's like, all my needs are so met that looking inside my work feels meaningless. And therefore I feel like the people who are working for nothing, but they're building something, are now better off than me. Like that's how perverted that system is.
Yeah, we should. I would, you know what I would really like, Pete? I would like for you to read this book so we could have a conversation about it. Maybe I'll send you a copy. If I send you a copy, would you read it?
100%. I was just thinking how much I'd love to read it. I love books about work. Like Studs Terkel Working is like the greatest, like one of my favorite books.
All right. Well, I'll send you this book because it's one of those things that comes up a lot in conversation for me where I always want to talk about it. And I've never had anyone else read it such that I could have a real conversation with them about it. So I'll send it to you. It's like how a similar thing I've got. I'm kind of obsessed with the idea. Well, I'm going to stop right there because we promised not to talk more about David Foster Wallace.
I'm all about it. I am positive. I am positive there are tens of thousands of completely useless jobs. But then again, you got to define completely useless.
More than tens of thousands.
If we were going to say completely useless,
this guy defines completely useless. It's a full definitional. It walks you through the whole thing.
Because like the feeling that I get right now with machines, the thing that I wrestle with is like, let's say you go to a coffee shop or like a Starbucks. Starbucks is trying so hard to like make connections with people. Like you walk in and everybody says, they all say it. It's all like a script they get somewhere. It's all like, good morning. You got anything fun planned for today? You know, they all say the same thing. And I'm like thinking to myself, like there is no way on God's green that a machine cannot make me a better cup of coffee than these people. You could get it down to the exact measurements. I could request it. I could have it tailored to me by this AI and machine. It would, the parts per million, all this kind of stuff, right? Like I would assume that that you could replicate something like a Starbucks latte. Now, I'm not saying you can replicate, you went to San Torino and had a cafe on the Palazzo. I'm not saying you can replicate that with a machine, but a Starbucks like latte, you can replicate with a machine. It probably better, and I would probably still pay the same price for it even. But like, if you put the machine there, that human is not necessary in the sense that it can do the job better. But like, I need to connect with another human. And I still think other human beings will. I don't think we're going to let machines take over the intimate connection points in our day. And mm-hmm. therefore the job has meaning, even if it could be totally replaced.
And even if machines could actually be better at creating that kind of connection,
for sure,
because that's one thing that machines, the sort of ChatGPT generation of AI, is quite good at creating seemingly meaningful human connections between humans and machines. Like they get in there and those machines are pretty good at like the small talk.
Yeah, and I think that's what we look for, because we're so used to thinking about all of our machines as talking without contractions and stuff. I cannot do that, Dave. You know, we've done that. We've done that for 100-something years now. So, you know, there we go. I just think like,
there we go.
Yeah, a little bit of charm goes a long ways, as we human beings have discovered.
It does. I learned something really recently that was really interesting about coffee, speaking as we were about coffee and baristas, is that you have to wait. I'm not a coffee drinker, but my wife is. But I was talking to this dude from Argentina who's a sort of heavy coffee drinker, and one of these guys who thinks deeply about very specific things and how to make things better. And one thing that he mentioned is that when you make your coffee in the morning, you boil your water and then you pour it in your French press or whatever. What you need to do after you boil your water is there's a specific temperature that coffee should be made at. So you boil your water, but then you need to let it cool. You need to let it cool a little bit. He had a very specific temperature. I don't remember what it was. But, you know, for the practical user, you need to let your water cool for maybe like 10 minutes before you pour it over. Whether you're doing a pour over or a French press or whatever, you need to let it cool before you pour it in there. Otherwise, it's too hot and it'll create a different taste. So if you let it cool off a little bit, it creates actually a better tasting coffee, which I found kind of fascinating. Do you let your water cool before you make your coffee?
Yeah, I've done like kind of the different things, because the thing that I don't, I love coffee, and I just think it's like one of the most shockingly useful things humanity has ever stumbled across. Like this idea that there's this warm, invigorating drink that we can have in the morning that like just like that, like that's like more of a close thing to God than anything I could think of. Like, here you go, guys, it's a little something for you. So it's great. But I don't like the bitterness of it, which it can get. So I started doing the pour over, and I've experimented with it. I don't know if I can discern like that level of difference. Like but I like it better when I do pour over versus like the Mr. Coffee. And it also just makes me really deliberate about coffee.
Well, why don't you do it? You should do a, because you boil your water, right?
I have a little electric
kettle. So you should do a pour over. You should boil enough water that you have enough for two cups. You should do a pour over right after it boils, which is probably what you do regularly. And then you should wait with the same beans, the same everything. You should wait 10 minutes and then do the pour over with the rest of it. And then do a taste test and see which one's better.
I will. I'm happy to do that. I don't know.
And that's the beauty. That's the beauty of this podcast, is that we never follow up on our little challenges.
I will try to. Like, one of my favorite things about coffee is that during the Civil War, it was like this huge item because they had blockaded the South. So you couldn't get beans in from Cuba or, you know, wherever. And so the North is the only ones who could get coffee, and they had it like as part of their ration. So there was this huge black market trade of coffee to the Confederacy, and what would come back was like moonshine and tobacco. And it's like, this is just humanity, right? It's like, what do we got, guys? What do we got? We're going to line up on the fence. We're going to kill each other. Now, you got coffee, and you know that ain't fucking fair. They're like, okay. But you got tobacco, and you got moonshine, and you know that ain't fair. All right. So we're going to, before we all start killing each other, son of a bitch, let's just trade around a couple of these things. It's like, it just,
but at the same time, what an advantage. They should have leveraged. They shouldn't have made those trades, the North, because like, hey, we've got coffee. We're going to fucking win this war. There's no doubt about it. Like, the side that has coffee is going to win the war. And the side that has moonshine and tobacco is less likely to win the war.
Yeah, for sure. You are going to retreat to your moonshine and tobacco. All we have is the coffee. All we have is getting up first thing in the morning and getting ready, right? Getting organized and taking trades, you know? So it's just, it's coming for you. But apparently, you were rationed it, and the soldiers were given just green coffee beans. Now, I don't know if you've seen how coffee is made, but it's a fuck ton of like roasting and turning this stuff over and doing all this. And then you have to grind it and all this stuff. Like, when you buy coffee, you're buying the end of a very finished product. And they just get green beans and you just have to like roast them. And so they started putting coffee grinders in the butts of their muskets. Like, that's how
important
coffee was. Wow. So you can see these Civil War muskets that just have these built-in grinders, and you'd pour into the butt, like the stock of it. You'd pour your coffee in there and you'd turn the little thing and it would grind out your coffee. So when you were in the field, you could there are laws to this day about how much coffee people are allowed to have, like, as soldiers and stuff. It's crazy. Like, we went bananas. Oh, I said it. We went wild. Coffee and, wild.
And now we have Monster Energy drink, which, those soldiers are not drinking coffee anymore now that Monster Energy drink is available.
I'm positive it's mostly Monster Energy drink. It looks it.
However, I
like
do...
Like, just from their branding on the UFC and on trucks, I assume those are soldiers at some point.
But I do like the idea of having a coffee grinder on the butt of your rifle. I mean, talk about doing it live.
Yeah, put that in a new one. Electric one on like the M4. So you can be civilized out in the field?
You were talking about coffee being one of kind of God's perfect creations. I would like to talk about four perfect things that man has created. And
I would love to hear about these four things.
And my hope is that, obviously you haven't had a chance to think about this in advance, but my hope is that you'll have one or two perfect things, because we all observe and identify these things that, you know, occur in our lives that are just perfect. And for me, as like a, you know, hardworking type A left coast elite, I'm definitely kind of on the hunt for things in my life that are enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to find it, because we're always trying to get more and trying to do better and trying to be happier and more fit and more this or more that or whatever. And so I'm always looking out for like, okay, what's a thing that's enough in my life where I'm satisfied with it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good with that. Like, I'm traveling enough, or my marriage is enough, or, you know, whatever, something is enough. And I'm always looking for these things. But on another level, there are things that are perfect just as they are. They've just peaked to the point where you cannot do better with these things. And the first of these four things that I've found is... You know what I'm going to say.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Just like, I wasn't sure what the first thing was going to be. And then it's like,
yeah, oh, yeah. Obviously. Obviously, it's Schilling's Mango Supernova Excelsior Imperial Mango. Obviously. This is the perfect beverage. And I'm drinking it right now, which is why I put it first. Mango Schilling Imperial cider is the perfect beverage. It's so good. It goes down so easy. It tastes delicious, but it's not too sweet. It's not too dry. And it's 9.1% ABV. It's just the perfect thing at the perfect time.
It's efficient and tasty.
It really is. So Mango Schilling, my hat is off to you as a perfect thing that man and not God has created. The second thing that I've been noticing recently that is perfect is Reese's Pieces.
Oh, Pieces?
Yeah, the pieces. The peanut butter cups are fine. I don't know. And look, if you don't like Reese's, and if you don't like Reese's Pieces in particular, I get it. I don't have a problem with that. Like,
I love the peanut butter cup. I just feel like the pieces are too peanut buttery. There's not enough ratio. I need more chocolate in my peanut butter.
I'm sorry, Pete, but the the pieces are perfect. They cannot be improved upon. You cannot mess with that ratio. You pop those suckers in your mouth. They are so good. They're so
interstellarly known.
Exactly. The third thing is several books by my favorite author, Haruki Murakami, or at least top three author. His book, The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, which is perfect. I'm reading one of his other books right now. Have you read much Haruki Murakami?
No.
None?
He's always intimidates me.
No. This is not intimidating.
I'm always like, nope, that's for like guys who are real deep into the New York Times book review, and I just don't have that kind of effort.
No, it's super accessible. It's
really
it's more accessible than Philip Roth. It's just right in there. Oh yeah, it's so good. And anyway, Wind Up Bird Chronicle is a perfect book. And the problem with this take is that Haruki Murakami has maybe three other books that are also perfect. Sputnik Sweetheart is one, South of the Border, West of the Sun is another one, and Colorless Tsukuru Sasaki and His Years of Pilgrimage is another one, but Wind Up Bird Chronicle is the standard bearer, the flagship of Haruki Murakami's suite of perfect books. It is so good, and like, you know, we've talked a lot about literature, things that we love and share, Lonesome Dove, Philip Roth, a lot of things that are just really, really good. But I do think Haruki Murakami stands alone in his ability to write perfect books, of which he has approximately four.
That's intense. I am looking at a copy of it right now. I was going to say, one of the perfect things I can think of is probably Lonesome Dove as a book, as a novel, as an American novel. I think it's as close as you can get to perfect in an American novel.
I don't disagree with that at all. The last thing that I have that's perfect is there's a lot of perfect songs out there that I've encountered, even perfect albums. And so what I'm going to put on my list of perfect things in terms of a song is one that I've heard very recently and I've been in listening to a lot very recently, which is a song called Wildfires by a man called Salt, S-A-U-L-T. And again, I'm not saying this is the perfect song because it's not, because there's a lot of them, but this is a perfect song that I've encountered recently that I've enjoyed. It's just this perfect vibe track, just real nice. You pop it on anytime. It just sounds really slick, really nice. Check it out. Those are my four perfect things. Reese's Pieces, Mango Shilling, Wind Up Bird Chronicle, and a couple of other Murakami books, and the song Wildfires by Salt. Pete, did this trigger your thinking, or were you too busy listening that you didn't have a chance to do your own independent thought? Did you come up with any things that are perfect?
Are these things that you think are perfect of the moment, or do you think are lifelong, indelible, there will only be four things, and it is these four?
No. The first three are in that category. Reese's Pieces, Mango Shilling, Wind Up Bird Chronicle, and a couple of other Murakami books are perfect for this time and for all time. They will never be supplanted. It will never change. I only have, another 50 to 60 tops years on this planet. I will never find anything as perfect as the Wind Up Bird Chronicle, Mango Shilling, and Reese's Pieces. But Wildfires by Salt, I will find more perfect songs, more perfect albums, etc.
So what happens if you just do all those three things together? You grab your copy of Wind Up Bird Chronicle and some Reese's Pieces and a Shilling's Hard Cider. Like, what happens? You just sit down and just, you can do them all at once.
I think that would work real well for me.
You don't think it'd be too much? It'd just be like, nope, perfect, balanced. Here I am. Everything is great. God's in his heaven. Thrush is on the wing. Snail is on his thorn.
I think two of them is all you can really handle at one time.
Okay. I am prepared now to go because that has inspired me. And I will follow along in my slightly, in some ends, higher brow, and some ends, lower brow. There is a inexpensive red wine from Washington State that for some reason I absolutely love. And every time I have it, it's exactly perfect. I don't know why. It's a blend. There are other versions of it or other versions of red blends from the same area and stuff. And I don't know what it is exactly about it, but it suits my tastes so well. It often is on sale. It's not expensive. And every time I see it, it's like just this little treat for me. I'm just like, I'm buying six bottles. Oh, wow. I'm going to have it.
Can I make a guess? I don't have like an informed guess here.
It's a small winery from a not particularly interesting part of Washington. But yes, you absolutely can.
It's not a call.
No, although those guys are great. Yeah.
Those guys are real good.
That's a That's a high-end winery, though. What, okay, Nicole is like one of the first, and it's like Red Mountain Walla Walla. So that's yeah, what good shit
you're
is.
Paying $20 to $30, maybe even $40
for
that
the
bottle.
For the garbage. Yeah, you're paying. yeah, you're paying $20 or $30 for the piss version of La Colle.
So we're talking about like a $10 bottle.
$10 bottle.
Okay, so
it 10 can... to 12. Often you can get it on sale for like $9.99. Probably at its regular markup, it might be 12, 13 bucks.
Holy cow! So it's definitely not that like 14 hands, which is ubiquitous in Washington.
Oh, right. No, and I also think that's garbage.
Yeah.
It's not a shillings. That is that is something else.
But it's not from like the Wallouk Slope or, you know, Red Mountain or anything like that.
It's from Tri-Cities, actually, Yakima Valley.
I'm at a loss. What is this one?
Airfield.
Interesting. Never heard of it.
Yeah. It's just called Airfield. It's got this plane on it. It's so good, though. I don't know what it is about it. It just, and it's like, it's not a small winery, but it's not as big or prestigious as these other ones, but it just pumps out. Every time I've had it, I'm like, this is exactly it. This is what I was looking for. When I think of like sitting down on a porch and having a glass of red wine or talking to somebody or like having it with a steak or something like that, where you really think of those like, man, I like those big, deep red wines. This is what I think of. It's like I don't know if it's perfect. Well, I guess it would have to be by definition. It's like the platonic ideal of red wine to me.
That's what we're looking for. So when you envision yourself drinking a glass of red wine, it's on a porch.
Yeah.
Because I generally envision myself in like a fancy restaurant drinking red wine.
Yeah, I like, mostly what I drink at home is red wine. So I think that's it. I do love red wine at restaurants. But I like, basically what I really want to do is I want to die the exact same way Vito Corleone dies in The Godfather. And what he does in the end of that movie is he's got his affairs staked up. He's got Michael going in the right direction. Business is going to be all taken care of. He's going to settle all of his debts. His legacy is secured. He's in his backyard playing with his grandson around a bunch of his Italian gardening stuff. He's got his green beans and his maranzanos going, you know, everything out in the backyard. And he's got this little table in the back, and next to him, he's got like his bottle of like Montepulciano and his little glass. And he's just having a glass of wine and playing with his grandson. Boom, heart attack, drops dead. Like, that's what I want. Perfect landing. That's how you do it. I mean, that's going to be rough on the grandson who's a little kid playing in the backyard. I hope it's not quite like that. But I mean, this is what I think of when I like to be at my house on my porch with a glass of Airfield. That's how it's going to happen.
Airfield. So I will look for Airfield now because I've never seen nor tried this beverage, but it sounds great. And
it's excellent.
And I'm really intrigued now because red wines to me are something that sort of go in one ear and out the other unless they're just really, really good, which it sounds like this one is.
Yeah, and I don't even know if this is really, really good. It's just the right one for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think more and more that all this stuff about wine and all these things, it's like, yeah, it's true. You can probably talk about how these things are and the acidity or whatever. But like, it just kind of comes down to, there's like a mixture of it that works for you. And however it is, Airfield's process or grapes or whatever, by nature of it being a second class piece of real estate or something, I don't know. Somehow it just works out exactly right. I'm like, that's it. That's it. I found it. I'm good.
All right. Anything else is perfect?
Yes. A Brown and Haley Cherry Mountain Bar.
Cherry That's Mountain Bar. Are those little things that are like, it's a small package, maybe like 3 inches by 2 inches or something, and there's like a bulge in the middle that has like some kind of cherry in the middle? Like,
Yep. It's just like a bunch of milk chocolate with crushed almonds surrounding a cherry cordial with cherry nougat. And it is made by Brown and Haley's, which is just a small Tacoma confectionery, but they're the ones who make Almond Roca. So have you ever had Almond Roca?
Oh, yeah.
That's Brown and Haley's. And a couple of other things people probably know. But they make these, they're called mountain bars, and they're just like sold like really regionally. And every once in a while I get them up here. You can get them online, and they are incredible. They have a peanut butter one too that's also incredible.
That sounds really good. And we should do right now a quick spontaneous fuck 'em on milk chocolate. And we shouldn't.
I like milk chocolate.
Well, the thing
is, what's wrong with milk chocolate?
Reese's Pieces are made with milk chocolate. This thing that you've just described, this mountain cherry bar, is made with milk chocolate. But like, I don't like milk chocolate in general. Like, if I eat like a bar of milk chocolate, I'm not going to enjoy that. Whereas dark chocolate is real nice. Like, I love dark chocolate.
Yeah, I don't like dark chocolate.
Really? You prefer milk chocolate to dark chocolate?
I do.
Wow.
Of course I do. I'm a American. right? I'm like, you know, I'm like one of those assholes. Be like, these are where Europeans are constantly like looking down on me with their chocolates.
Yeah. All right. Got anything else?
So what did I say? That's it, right? I did three things.
You did two.
Okay. No, I didn't. I did Airfield Wine.
Yep.
Brown and Haley Cherry Bar.
Yes.
Lonesome Dove, the novel.
Okay. Lonesome Dove. Do you want to speak on Lonesome Dove and why it's perfect? Because I don't disagree with that. I think Lonesome Dove is perfect.
There's nothing left to say. It's perfect. You should, if you haven't read it, pick it up. Really. It sounds like you're not going to like it. You're going to like it. It lives up to the hype. It's like going to Hawaii. It's one of the few things when you go there, you're like, God, Jesus, this is nice.
To me, going to Hawaii does not live up to the hype, but Lonesome Dove.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay. It's one of those things where the hype kind of overtakes there's so much hype that you go there and you're like, well, this is going to be awesome. And you go there and it's like, it's cool, I guess, but it's expensive. And, you know, it rains every now and then. And like, maybe it's not so great after all. Like, I don't feel that when I go to Hawaii. And I feel the absence of it when I'm in Hawaii. I'm just like, this should be perfect.
Too much pressure?
I think so.
Every time I've been to Hawaii, I've only been twice, but both times I've been like, whew, sure is nice here in the Pacific with the sweetened trade wind breezes and the Finding Nemo right off my beach.
Well, the snorkeling is nice for sure. All right, any music you want to throw in the mix there?
Honestly, the piece of music that I've been enjoying the most, I was given over to by the algorithm, Danny. You'll be happy to know. It was a suggestion that led me to... INXS's album Kick.
INXS.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. Every song a banger.
All right. And this is from what, the mid to late 80s?
86. INXS Kick. Let me tell you a couple of these songs. Let me tell you a couple of tracks here from the Kick. 1987. New Sensation. Never Tear Us Apart. Hmm. Devil Inside.
Okay.
Need You Tonight.
I'm in.
I mean, you know all these songs, right?
All right, I'm dialing it up, man. That sounds really good.
Anyway, it's a blast. Kick is just one of those weird albums from 1987 by an Australian proto new wave turned melodic ballad, and it works like a charm. I don't know. Hmm. You can never do it again.
Hmm. Well, there you have it. Hey, thanks for listening to the Middle Brown Multiverse. If you'd like to join our army of subscribers, you can do so at patreon.com/middlebrownmultiverse. There's a free option or a paid option that gives you access to bonus episodes that you've made.